Thank you, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, August 7th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights intensifies efforts to free 29 Chingwizi villagers arrested for alleged public violence last week.
The South African cabinet approves a new program for Zimbabweans working and living in South Africa.
All of us were agreeing that the reasons why all these Zimbabweans are here, over 275,000 that were issued with this permit 4 years ago, is simply because our economy is not in a position to accommodate everyone.
And the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit has ended in Washington, D.C., with African leaders resolving to empower youth, boost food security, curb Ebola, and promote good governance.
The last session that we had on good governance emphasized that good governance means everybody has a voice, that government is transparent and thereby accountable.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says it has intensified its bid to have 29 Chingwizi villagers arrested for alleged public violence freed from detention after filing a bail application. The human rights body has raised serious concern with the continued detention of the 29, who include an 84-year-old man, two teenagers, and a toddler. There is also a growing concern for the well-being of other villagers who are said to have gone for a week without accessing their antiretroviral drugs. Another detainee, Colin Tandare, who is a single parent, is also said to have left two children, including one under the age of 2 years, unattended and have reportedly gone missing. Lawyer Colin Maboke tells the Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that Chiredzi magistrate Tayengwa Chibanda will deliver his judgment Friday.
The matter was rolled over to Tuesday. Unfortunately, the court did not rule it for our favor. We then proceeded to apply for a bail on behalf of the 29, indicating that the 29 are the good candidates for bail. The reason being that they are people of six abroad. Their residence is in Chingwizi, where they have been placed by the government. Secondly, it was their first time to be involved in an act of violence, which is not yet been proved at the end by the court. And at the same time, we also argued to the court that if they are to be released on bail, they will not interfere with evidence or with the investigations, which is being alleged by the state that it is scandalous. So the court postponed the matter to tomorrow for the bail ruling.
We understand that there is a very old man who was also detained, and one of the persons detained left minors unaccompanied. Can you tell us more about these two cases?
It is true. If this guy is driving, he is 84 years. He is a very, very old man. He cannot even walk alone in that walking stick. And it's very difficult for him to say that old man participated in any exercise. And at the same time, it is true that there is a woman who is a single woman who left his 3-year-old child in custody. So far as we speak right now, she's not even aware of the whereabouts of his child.
And that was lawyer Colin Baboke speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Chiredzi.
The ZANU-PF National Youth Conference kicked off in Harare today with delegates from the country's 10 provinces arriving for the 4-day meeting. The Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation is reporting that the league, through its secretary Absalom Skosana, today endorsed the candidature of President Robert Mugabe's wife, Grace, to take up the post of secretary for women's affairs. Skosana is said to have made the announcement at Amai Mugabe's Mazowe Children's Home, where ZANU-PF youths and guests had gathered to endorse him. Tomorrow, the youths are expected to discuss various issues, including the economy, before holding elections to choose new members on Saturday. Vice President Joyce Mujuru attended the opening ceremony today. There is joking from all the provinces for the post of Deputy Secretary for Youth Wing, allegations that some senior party members are putting pressure on the youth wing to choose their favorite candidates is also mounting. Outgoing ZANU-PF Youth Secretary for International Affairs, Tongaika Sukwere, is reported to have also raised the issue of senior members interfering with the Youth League's affairs. Political analyst and Platform for Youth Development Director Clarice Maduku tells Studio 7 that it is disappointing that ZANU-PF is not giving its youth wing the freedom they deserve to run their own affairs.
You know, in ZANU-PF, it is not expected for someone to go against the candidate of President Mugabe. As it stands, the wife of President Mugabe simply stands for the values of the president. So everyone in ZANU-PF will continue to pile a lot of support and so forth for the president's wife. So in this case, we were not expecting much, but it is disappointing because these young people have not undergone through their own various district provinces where they are supposed to deliberate on whom to support. So in this sense, they are sort of like supportive of the factions that are within the party, where the candidate of my Grace Mugabe is simply to try and outdo the factions of Mnangagwa and my Mujuru.
We also heard that one of the Youth League members raised the issue of interference by senior party members. Do you think that they will listen to him?
It's a lot of bravery for that one to have raised it, but as we have seen, the culture in ZANU-PF is that the young people, even from history, it's only now that we are seeming to see that they are now considering that those who are 35 years and below, respecting the constitution, that they will be voted. But for a long period of time, people who have been leading the youth, like Absalom Skosana, are people who are 60 years and above. So the culture of allowing young people to do business as usual is not there in ZANU-PF.
That was political analyst and Platform for Youth Development Director Clarice Maduku in Harare.
A group of suspected ZANU-PF activists who invaded ZAPU leader Dumiso Dabengwa's farm last week have vowed to stay put at the Nyamandlovu property in Matabeleland North, despite having promised to vacate by yesterday. The group, led by war veterans Tariro Magovanyika and Mark Mukotami, is alleged to have started parceling out small plots of land to their colleagues. The pair was also named as the people behind the invasion of a Bulawayo City Council property, Nature Reserve, last month. Efforts to get a comment from the two were fruitless. Dabengwa told Studio 7's Chris Gande he went to the farm this afternoon and spoke with the pair, adding though they had said they would leave the property, they have now vowed to stay put.
Well, last week when they started, I went to see them, and they told me that they'd been sent there and allocated that farm to occupy, and they wanted to put up their shelters in order to get ready for the rainy season when it starts. And I said, no ways. That is my farm. I bought it. It's not just one of those farms that was allocated like that. I bought it. It's my sweat. And I will not allow anybody to come in just willy-nilly like that. So they then confessed that they had been told, they had been sent there by their ZANU-PF bosses who were stationed at the Mazwi Game Park, which belonged to the Bulawayo City Council, which they've also occupied.
Do you have any livestock on the farm, and what has happened to that livestock?
It's a farm which is 1,200 hectares, and it has got 300 plus cattle.
That was Dumiso Dabengwa, the ZAPU leader, speaking there with Studio 7's Chris Gande.
The South African Cabinet has approved a new Zimbabwean dispensation program amid talks of the extension of permits issued to Zimbabweans 4 years ago. In a release of the cabinet proceedings held yesterday, cabinet, quote, approved the new Zimbabwean dispensation process of court. The statement adds the Minister of Home Affairs will conduct a separate media briefing to announce details of this process. Studio 7 was unable to reach South African acting spokesperson Pulma Williams for comment.
Zimbabwean Home Affairs Minister Kembo Mohadi last week met with his South African counterpart Maluse Gigaba on the permits issue that were granted to Zimbabweans in 2010 to clarify if South Africa would extend the permits after an earlier cabinet decision said all Zimbabweans would be required to go back once the permits expired. After the meeting, Minister Gigaba told Parliament there would be a decision before the 15th of August. Some Zimbabwean organizations in South Africa are claiming that Pretoria has stepped up an operation to flush out illegal immigrants, among them Zimbabweans. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Ngaputo Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa, who welcomes the decision by the South African government to allegedly approve the new permits, because we don't have much about the permits. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, the argument that the South African government was, during the negotiation process that was putting forward, was to say, when 4 years ago, when these permits were issued 4 years ago, there was a political and economic crisis in Zimbabwe, where quite a number of Zimbabweans that were holders of asylum documents, some of course had acquired South African IDs. So we all agreed that yes, we've had a new constitution in Zimbabwe. Yes, we've had a new election, an election in Zimbabwe, though of course its outcome is not the outcome that others would have wanted it to be. But generally the understanding is that all these Zimbabweans that are here for earning a living. Therefore, it is quite critical to allow them to remain in the Republic of South Africa.
And of course, this came out from cabinet last night, so details, of course, are a bit vague. But what do you hope this process will be like, looking at the previous process that happened 4 years ago?
We hope that this time around, because in the proposals that we made when at a meeting with the Honorable Mohadi, when I was going to meet with Minister Kikaba on Thursday last week, we were saying it's the second documentation project, because you still have other Zimbabweans that are living in South Africa illegally, post the issuing of permits.
Mabuto Mabena, chairman of the Zimbabwe community in South Africa.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Ministers from countries within the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, have agreed to put preventive measures across the SADC region to prevent the outbreak of Ebola in the region. This came out of a two-day emergency meeting convened in Johannesburg, South Africa, from yesterday to formulate a regional response to the Ebola epidemic. A statement released by the regional body reads, South Africa will be the center of excellence in Ebola laboratory diagnosis for the region. The SADC Secretariat says World Health Organization officials and other stakeholders are in attendance. However, Deputy Minister of Health Paul Chimeza told Studio 7 Minister David Parrenyatwa could not attend the SADC meeting as he was held up by other matters. Earlier, Chimeza said the government is prepared to combat the Ebola virus if it finds its way into the country. He said his ministry has reactivated rapid response teams to man all exit and entry points and has started training health personnel experts. The outbreak, which was first reported in Guinea and has spread to Liberia and Sierra Leone in West Africa. A delegation of Australian legislators who arrived in the country early this week toured humanitarian and development projects funded by their government in Ulawayo today, including waterworks and sewer disposal units. The lawmakers, led by Australian Ambassador in Harare, Matthew Newhouse, were taken on a tour by Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo, who expressed the city's gratitude for their support. Moyo tells Studio 7 more.
Basically, they were on a finding are missing. Australia has been giving us some help through the most difficult time, particularly in 2008 when everything was a mess. Our biggest challenge then was cleaning up the city because the sewage system was blocked and the sewer was spewing out into the open and into houses. And they gave us equipment and the instituted program to rehabilitate the sewer system. That work has been done and it was successful. They also funded the setup of a call center. Now, any report is reported to the call center. They were quite happy. And after that, to the sewage ponds at Magwegwe, where sewer is treated the natural way rather than the chemical treatment way. And they are the people who facilitated the rehabilitation of that system right from the houses up to the ponds, such that you rarely ever see a dirty sewer in the suburb now.
That was Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo on the line from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. If you are in South Africa, listen to Studio 7 through the following number, 010-591-6465.
If you are in America or Canada, you can tune in to our phone number, 712-432-5882. Once again, 712-432-5882.
If you are in Britain, call 033-0010-334. Once again, 033-0010-334.
The U.S.-Africa Leader Summit has ended in Washington, with African leaders resolving to empower youths, boost food security, curb Ebola, and promote good governance. Summit Chairman President Mohamed Abdel Aziz of Mauritania told delegates before the end of the summit yesterday evening that these commitments are designed to promote development and growth in Africa. He said the leaders also resolved to promote inter-Africa trade and further boost relations with America, which mobilized about $37 billion in investments and development aid for Africa during the three-day summit.
Mr. Abdelaziz further noted that the continent is committed in the establishment of the Africa Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the promotion of Power Africa, which seeks to ensure that most Africans access electricity. The more than 47 heads of states and government also resolved to commit themselves to the renewal of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, that facilitates duty-free trade between the Africa and USA. Speaking on the same day, President Barack Obama emphasized the need to empower young people and the promotion of freedom in African countries.
The last session that we had on good governance emphasized that good governance means everybody has a voice, that government is transparent and thereby accountable. And even though leaders don't always like it, the media plays a crucial role in assuring people that they have the proper information to evaluate the policies that their leaders are pursuing. And so we have been very consistent in pushing governments, not just in Africa, but around the world, to respect the right of journalists to practice their trade as a critical part of civil society and a critical part of any democratic norm. We have been troubled by some of the laws that have been passed around the world that seem to restrict the ability of journalists to pursue stories or write stories. We've also been disturbed by efforts to control the internet.
His wife, Michelle Obama, who addressed a symposium for the heads of state spouses on the development and advancement for women and girls in Africa, urged African leaders to fight for the empowerment of women and girls. She also emphasized the need to support youths, including those under the Mandela Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders, in which 30 of them are Zimbabwean.
The partnership with this continent means a great deal to us. And we've seen the power, the potential. I mean, to meet these young leaders and to see how hungry they are to take their countries to a new level, that kind of passion is infectious. And it's something that young people here should know and understand. You know, we want people from America to travel to Africa, to understand its languages and its different cultures, and not to see it as a monolith, and to truly see the investment opportunities. We have to fight for our girls. There should never be a girl in this world who has to fear getting educated. That should be something that is intolerable to all of us. I can only think of my own girls, and I think we all have to see our daughters in these young girls. We want the best for our daughters. We want them to be smart and empowered and loved. We want them to be healthy. We want them to be mentally sound. And if it's good enough for our girls, it's good enough for every single girl in the world. But it's going to take leadership like us, women like us, speaking up in our countries and making sure that young girls are not subject to abuse and that they are loved and valued.
Ms. Obama also noted that the U.S. President's Emergence Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, in partnership with the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, has launched a $200 million program accelerating children's HIV/AIDS treatment. It is designed to double the total number of children receiving life-saving antiretroviral therapy across 10 priority African countries over the next 2 years. This will enable 300,000 more children to receive this treatment.
Speaking at the end of the summit, African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said the meeting was successful with frank discussions among the leaders. She said African leaders are happy that most of the priorities they had listed on their wish list were taken care of by the summit. She said, quote, "Africa looks forward to doing business with American companies, not because we need aid or assistance, but because it makes business sense to invest in Africa," close quote. The AUC chairperson said the summit was held at an opportune time when Africa is conceiving its Agenda 2063, the future it wants in the next 50 years.
Our priorities are the ones that we now interact against with our partners. And those would have been investing in our people, skills, health, agriculture, and in agriculture, not just increasing and modernizing and mechanizing, but also value addition. We also came with the priorities of infrastructure ranging from transport to energy infrastructure, ICT infrastructure, and of course, social infrastructure. And then we also came with issues around peace and security. I think those were the set of issues that mattered most to us. Of course, the issue of good governance and so on, and illicit flows of financial illicit flows were also on the agenda. Those we had raised last year at the G8. So we were now looking at a response. I think generally our discussions did in a way focus on all the issues we talked about. Of course, the Americans, when it came to investing in youth and so on, they were very strong on wanting leadership, entrepreneurs, but also agreeing that the youth needs skills generally. And of course, we discussed health issues as well. And that's why we've agreed, for instance, on the CDC, but also to continue working as we have been doing on areas like AIDS, TB, malaria, and so on.
That was African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma in Washington, D.C.
Observers like Nkululeko Siwanda of Britain's Huddersfield University are skeptical about some of the proposed investments aimed at turning around the fortunes of Africa, the world's fastest growing continent.
For perspective on what the U.S.-African Leaders Summit means for Zimbabwe, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to political analysts Gadzirai Chirumanzu and Pedzisai Ruhanya.
Yes, it is important because it opens doors for international cooperation, dialogue, international relations, doors for opening up investment in America, investment in Zimbabwe.
Mr. Chirimanzu.
No. It's not fruitful because from the word go, most African leaders want to be told what to do by the Westerners. Simple as all that. And from my point of view, I don't see anything which is going to change after this, you know, breakfast and the dinner engagement with President Obama. Because at the end of the day, what Africans need to realize is that they've got enough resources to push this continent out of poverty as long as they work together as a unity. You don't need capital from the West, but amongst ourselves, we can do wonders.
Dr. Ruhanya, your response on that issue.
You see, the tragedy with my fellow citizen is that he accepts that trade with China is important. China is an international player. In fact, the second biggest economy after America is the Chinese economy. He accepts that it's important to interact at the level of business with China. But he says it's not important to interact with America. China is a foreign power. America is a foreign power. But most importantly, America is led by one of our own.
Mr. Chirimanzu, is it okay that China can come in and work with economic issues in Africa but not America?
No. I never said America must not come in. China comes in when they deliver at the highest level, but they don't do that, you know, hold the gun, unlike the Western countries. You know, you see, we were once Rhodesians, but now we are Zimbabweans. You know, look at the whole of the southern region today. It is still having problems because of these Westerners. But with the China, for example, for us to have our independence today, it is because of this Eastern Bloc. Where were these Westerners? This is the issue. And they want to continue, you know, milking us. And at the end of the day, poverty, you know, amongst the blacks will continue.
If I may ask you, Honorable Truman, what is corruption that is rampant in this country to do with America? Are you telling me that the Americans, the Europeans, are asking you to steal?
You need
the of economic in Zimbabwe.
Ruhanya, you need not to be a megaphone, right? The issue is you need to separate between legal issues and the corruption.
Dr. Ruhanya, let me just bring this back together and ask Mr. Chirimanzu, looking at the summit itself, of course Zimbabwe was not present on official capacity, but came up a lot throughout the summit. Do you think that has relevance in regards to Zimbabwe moving forward with the West?
Yes. For example, Obama was asked by a 21-year-old Zimbabwean who can think so much better than most of the guys you have on this show, right? And he asked him, why are American companies not doing business with the Zimbabwean companies? Because of the sanctions you impose as a government. He could not answer a 21-year-old thinking Zimbabwean. At the end of the day, whether Zimbabwe was invited or not invited, the issue is this country under the leadership of President Robert Mugabe, today we are renowned as one of the educated, you know, country in Africa. And we are the first country in Africa to fully own its resources. And we are in charge.
Dr. Ruhanya, do you think that Zimbabwe will benefit out of the resolutions that have come out of this summit?
In Zimbabwe, we have a policy of marketization without democratization. Or a marketization or a liberalization of the economy in an illiberal political environment. So what we need for Zimbabwe to benefit is that if economic policies, if they are liberal, then we must also have liberal politics.
A political analyst, Pedzai Ruhanya, you also heard from Gadzirai Chirumanzu, another political analyst with ZANU-PF leanings.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about problems facing women and girls formerly based at Chingwezi Transit Camp in Mashingo.
To join the discussion, please text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights intensifies efforts to free 29 Chingwezi villagers arrested for alleged public violence last week.
The South African Cabinet approves a new program for Zimbabweans working and living in South Africa.
That's our broadcast for this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.